Welcome to the AI Business Podcast, where we feature conversations with interesting guests at the intersection of artificial intelligence and business.
Welcome back to another episode of the AI Business Podcast. I'm Ben Wodecki, and I'm really, really pleased today to be joined by the wonderful Leslie Shannon from Nokia. Leslie, how's it going?
Things are peachy.
That's wonderful to hear. So, Leslie, you are the head of trend scouting and the head of ecosystems as well. Is that right?
Head of trend and innovation scouting. Yeah. The word ecosystem used to be in my title, but then everybody in LinkedIn started contacting me and trying to sell me ecosystem things. So I had to change my title.
So that's already we're off to a bad start of my research. Leslie, give me a brief overview. give me a brief overview. What's your day-to-day? What is it you do in trend scouting?
Yeah, so I'm a little bit different from a lot of other trend scouts who usually trend scouting is linked to either acquisitions or partnering. For me, it's neither. I'm actually just scouting ideas. I'm looking for companies outside the world of telecommunication, where, of course, Nokia sits. So things that are not on our natural radar, companies that are coming up with innovations that are going to be calling on the network. Particularly, I'm interested in things that are going to be calling on the network in ways that I know the network doesn't currently exist. And then I bring that information back to the world of telecommunications and say, hey, Nokia, hey, phone companies who are our customers, this is coming. If you want to actually be able to run this on your network, our networks had better look like this in the future. And that's actually how I got into AR and VR, purely from the connectivity aspect, because there's a lot of things, particularly with AR and particularly with down the road consumer grade AR eyeglasses, connectivity is actually going to have to be there in a big way. And so we need to start building those networks now.
Awesome. So, Leslie, just to set the audience the scene here, we met at MWC. I heard you talk about kind of the metaverse, things going on. That was back in March, if you can believe it. It's now October for those listening. And, you know, what's kind of changed in that time for what you've seen in terms of AR and VR? Because there's been a lot of announcements, a lot of shift in the market's attention as well. What have you kind of seen?
One of the biggest shifts, of course, that's happened is that generative AI has really stolen all the headlines. And one of the most common questions that I get when I talk about AR or VR or spatial computing or, you know, even metaverse is people say, well, isn't that dead? And so it's like, well, no, actually, because if you look at the industry, you know, and I'm sure anyone listening to this podcast is aware, the industry itself is absolutely thriving. It's just a little bit, you know, quiet in the shadows right now. And I think Ori Inbar, who leads the AWE conferences, the Augmented World Expos, he really said it best at the end of May. XR is the interface to AI. And that is that, I think that encapsulates it perfectly. So yes, there's a lot of attention on AI, but AI and XR are not in two separate buckets. They completely interact with each other. And in fact, I think Meta demonstrated that really well with Meta Connect last week, where they actually showed that they were bringing AI into their Ray-Ban glasses. I am personally really excited about that development.
Yeah, can we talk about Meta Connect a little bit? Because, you know, we're recording a week after Meta Connect. I actually attended the event in VR. And I'll be honest, Leslie.
Me too.
Yeah, how did you find it? Talk me through how you found it.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it because, first of all, I've been to the Facebook campus. Sorry, Meta campus. And so I could see that, you know, Zuckerberg was standing on a stage that was in the center of the old center of the Meta campus. But what they had done in VR was they had actually taken that big visual of the stage, which was 3D, which was actually super cool. And then they had integrated it into something completely different so that the surroundings that you and I had in VR, it was actually in this lovely forest and it was this really groovy thing that was not like the Facebook campus. I keep saying Facebook.
It's fine, they know.
Yeah. Yeah, and they had... they had highlighted a few of the Horizons World areas for us to go and try before the thing actually started. And I went and I was trying the fishing game. And you know what? The controls were not intuitive. And I was a little bit horrified that they were highlighting this thing where it became an island full of people struggling to figure out how to run their fishing rod. I'm like, this is not the experience you want to be giving people if you're trying to sell them on Horizon Worlds. But the reveal itself and the use of VR, I thought, was more successful than any other one of the announcements that they've done.
Did you attend last year's event in VR as well, the 2022 version?
I didn't. No, sorry. I did. That one I was at a watch party. Yes.
Yeah, it was like a ski lodge kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I agree with you on the attempt to make it feel a bit more grandiose this year. I attended both last year and this year. But I'll be frank, I picked up on your point around the games. I found this year's event to be a bit flat. I actually wrote an article about it on AI Business, which I'll put a link in the description for our audience. I think what summed up for me, Leslie, was the lack of people in it. The museum had two exhibits. The games had kind of a fair few little people. And I think the one thing that summarized it for me, and I actually put this in the article, there was one experience, one kind of exhibit that was just literally a blank wall with a blank exhibit kind of signpost on it. And I was a bit underwhelmed by that. And I don't know, is that the kind of impression you got? You seem to find it a bit more enjoyable. Talk me through it.
Well, yes, actually, one of the takeaways, and I don't want this to come across as too judgy, but I'm thinking Meta really needs to hire a lot more creative people or partner with a lot more creative people, and because this was clearly built by technologists.
But then that's where AI comes in, right? That's where you said about it in March about the way that AI can generate assets, things like that. And we've had a huge explosion in that. So that's kind of tying into our main topic. What have you kind of seen in kind of asset generation, the increase of models? What are you kind of seeing in that space?
Yeah, I actually saw just recently a quote from a training company. Oh, yeah, Tailspin. And they were saying, oh, my God, AI has changed everything. It means that we can, you know, something that would take us, you know, 5 days to build, a training scenario. Now it can take us 30 minutes to build it using AI, but we're not firing people. What we're doing is we're actually using our staff to now make that a better experience, because we can focus on the human side of things and the actual experience rather than having to spend all of our time on the technical underpinnings and the infrastructure. And that to me was, I was very, thank you, Tailspin, for being so clear about that. For me, AI, and particularly generative AI, large language models where you can actually use natural language to describe what you want, and then the magic happens, and then voila, you get what you asked for, close or mostly. For me, this reminds me nothing more than when I was in high school and pocket calculators became affordable for the first time. And there was a huge debate in my calculus, chemistry, and physics classes about whether or not students should be allowed to use pocket calculators. Because the idea was, if they weren't doing the math, longhand on paper, then they weren't going to get a feel for the underlying mechanics. Fast forward, 90 years or whatever it's been.
Don't be silly.
And now, the TI-84 is like standard issue for all high school students. There's been this realization that you can, actually freeing you up from that pencil driven, long division, lets you kind of wipe away the grunty level of the math so you can get more quickly to the higher math and to the actual physics concepts and the actual chemistry concepts. And I think we're actually going to be seeing a huge amount of that in this advent of AI. It's a tool. It helps wipe away the grunty stuff at the bottom that is essential but not necessarily massively value adding. And so if everybody can access that foundation with AI, then we free up our brain space to actually build the great, wonderful stuff, the value add stuff on top.
Leslie, there's one part that ties into that, which is one company that are implementing these tools, one metaverse focused company that you actually mentioned at MWC. I'm very excited that you did, because not a lot of people are aware of them in the general normie space, and that's Roblox. You mentioned Roblox at the MWC, and they are doing a host of Gen AI stuff, and that is, in my view, a good example of that. And because they're coming to Quest as well, like from now,
yes,
you know,
yes.
What's your take on that? Because that is, in my view, one of the best applications for this. Non-biased here, of course.
Right. Completely agree. And I think one of the really powerful things about Roblox has been its willingness to read the room and to shift and to move into other platforms, but particularly their ability to give creative authorship to its very young user base and to teach them from early days that they can actually go out there and flex their creative muscles and actually benefit personally from it. Now, you know, of course, there have been problems with Roblox's business model, and some of the natures of the way they work, you know, are exploitative. And so, you know, yes, that is the elephant in the room. And so we definitely, you know, Roblox, you need to do better. On the whole, you know, the success of Roblox is actually a spectacular model for the, you know, what happens when you build something that's good and then give the tools to people to then do more with it, and the element of reward as well. All those things tie so together so beautifully in the Roblox platform.
So we talked about the platforms. Let's go back a step to MetaConnect, talking about the hardware. You love the smart glasses. I'm a bit skeptical. Talk me why you love them, or at least are excited by them, frankly.
Okay, so my vision of the future, you know, by the end of this decade, for me, the ideal iteration of the metaverse is not actually the fully immersive world. It's augmented reality, where we remain in our beautiful physical world with the wonderful people whom we love, and we are connecting with them with our direct eyes. But the amazing enhancements to our life that we get from computing are actually integrated into that physical world through digital representations. And for me, the question is, you know, so that's an end state that I can, you know, very easily imagine. But how do we get there? There needs to be a product that actually people will be willing to start using to enable that scenario. And the bottom line is, what is the service or the product that is actually going to get people to put computer-enhanced eyeglasses on their heads? Now, you and I both wear eyeglasses, so we already do this because we have to. You know, it's our vision needs help. But for all the people, but also, you know, they don't weigh very much, and I don't have to worry about charging them or anything like that. It's a big ask to get people to actually put some kind of a computing device on their faces. And especially if you're talking to people who don't wear glasses at all. So there needs to be some kind of service that is attractive enough and instantly beneficial enough. If you have to explain it for 5 minutes, that's not it. It has to be something that people can intuitively understand from the start. And so one of the things that I've been excited about the possibility is real-time subtitles, whether translated or not. I think that actually has huge potential for upending a quite predatory hearing aid market. I don't know how it is in the UK, but in the States, hearing aids are just like, yeah, it's predatory. But I think hands-free AI that is available for you to just chat with as you go about your day, something that's a good deal smarter than, you know, a voice assistant as they exist now, that to me could also be the way in, especially as they hinted, if Meta is going to be adding the visual component, so there's actually some awareness of your context to be able to include in the answers further down the path, they said. So I see this as kind of like the phrase gateway drug just came into my mind. That's probably a really bad analogy. an on-ramp to the experience of actually having some kind of visual compute.
Well, you say that, but then in the demo, they showed the HUD, a heads-up display, in the concept. Obviously, it's a concept. It's not going to be in the final product. Bit misleading for me, but, you know, is that kind of what you're, basically a more advanced, less gimmicky kind of glass product, Google Glass, if we remember God, is that 10 years now, Google Glass?
It is almost, yeah. I think that was 2014. It's, yeah, part of the problem, this is another question I get a lot. Part of the problem with Google Glass is that nobody really knew what it was for. And it was very minimal in terms of the facial structure with this ginormous camera that was like a little cannon that was pointed at people. And so all that people could see is like, I'm sorry, you're pointing this thing that looks like a little mini cannon at me. And this is kind of threatening. So, you know, and so the non-understanding of what the purpose was pretty major. But that was, you know, that was 10 years ago, as just noted. And so that was a time when, TikTok didn't exist. Now, nobody questions having a camera facing outwards all the time, because of course you're making some, you know, TikTok content, go right ahead, you know, film me. So that whole context has shifted. The ability to actually, another kind of initial way that I see things going is I look at heads-up displays in cars. And I recently had the experience, I was with a colleague, and he drives a BMW that has a heads-up display, and he's had it for like 6 months. And we were driving together somewhere, and he rented a car, so we were not in his car, and this rental car did not have a heads-up display. He was complaining every 30 seconds for the whole 2 hours of the drive, that how incredibly inefficient and dangerous it was, that he had to take his eyes off the road to look down at the speedometer or to look even further down at the dashboard where the navigation was. And he's like, this is not safe. This is making me take my eyes off the road. And, you know, anybody who's been driving for their like whole life, like he was and me, you know, we've spent our whole lives taking our eyes off the road to look at the speedometer and to look at the navigation. But 6 months of the heads-up display, where a minimal graphic representation of both the navigation and his current speed has been available in that same view, that was such an essential experience for him that he cannot go backwards. And I really see that kind of minimal heads-up display coming into it, integrated with our visual field. I think that's going to be the powerful thing. To start off with, no, it's not going to be snazzy graphics. It's going to be a little arrow that soon you will not be able to live without. That's really, you know, again, looking at the early days, it's going to be minimal, but effective and problem solving. And that'll be the thing that starts us getting into wearing all these things.
So can I expand that and ask you about the consumer side in terms of you've got headsets from obviously the Quest 3 looks pretty nifty. Annoyingly, my Quest 2 is now out of date. And then you've got...
I know, isn't that terrible?
It's awful. Like, I hate the rings, and they finally got rid of the rings. So I joke with my friends, I'm going to snip the rings off. Don't do that, please. But then you've got the Vision Pro, which is more expensive from Apple, but consumer-facing. And I was speaking to someone from a tech vendor recently who said that, you know, these two are aiming for consumers, but in a more focused way, as in watching content. And I was sat there going, okay, I can see the Vision Pro doing well because I'm on an iPhone. I can flick something to my Vision Pro. The Quest doesn't really have that interoperability, as far as I'm aware, but it has cloud gaming, things like Microsoft. That deal to me is huge.
Xbox Game Pass, I think is huge as well.
Yeah,
yes.
Can you talk me through the kind of consumer-grade stuff at the moment? And is there any applications like that you're seeing on this as well?
Well, one of the things I got super excited about the Xbox Game Pass for a technical reason, and the reason that my industry, the telecommunications industry, is involved with AR and we're monitoring this space very closely, is that the only way that we can actually have these eyeglasses form factor computing elements that sit on our face is if the functionality, the computing functionality that currently resides on these glasses, including the new Ray-Bans with the AI, all the processing is on device. But if we're going to have glasses that look, you know, slim and everything and fashionable, the processing has to come off the device and it has to go somewhere else. And early models, it's sitting in a smartphone, quite often connected with a cable, like in the Unreal glasses. But then that computing, especially if you're dealing with generative AI, it's going to need to go into the network where it can sit on bigger servers. So that's a change to the network architecture. And that's a significant change. And that's why my industry needs to get out there and start building that architecture. But here's the thing. Telecommunications companies are not going to start sticking servers in their network close to end users because for latency reasons, you have to have the computing relatively close to the end users. You can't, it, you know, deep in the internet isn't good enough for generating visual content on something like eyeglasses AR. But how do you monetize that? Because the AR stuff that we're talking about is deep in the future. So, you know, so it's like, okay, that's fine for a theoretical thing, but if I build those servers, I'm not going to make any money. Here's the thing. Cloud gaming has exactly the same architecture. And that means a server sitting in the network not too far away from you for latency reasons. Exactly the same architecture. And guess what? Cloud gaming is monetizable now. So bringing cloud gaming and integrating it into the whole XR world, that actually is the thing that will provide the impetus for the phone companies and the other technology companies of the world to start putting the servers out there close enough to the end users that ultimately will power AR experiences. Massive, massively wonderful development. Yeah, it's something that we really needed.
What else are you seeing in terms of trends then, Leslie? Because we've touched on a kind of a wide variety of stuff, but is there anything outside of this that you're seeing that you guys are monitoring actively that you can obviously talk about, or are you, is it just something general that's on your personal radar?
This is way out there, but one of the things that that I'm seeing for the next decade is kind of implanted connectivity to give us to augment us as human beings. And, you know, in one early example of this, the University of California at San Francisco, they've been working with patients who are unable to speak. And they've been doing things where they actually, and in this case, they're actually, this is an invasive surgery, and they put electrodes on the surface of the brain. You know, this is not going to be a consumer thing, but in terms of helping people who are disabled. And then having them imagine that they're voicing, even though they can't voice, you know, 1,000 different phrases, and then, you know, measuring what the brain activity is, and then being able to then extrapolate from that to be able to give the person a voice, to have an avatar then, you know, when they imagine the things they want to say, the avatar can speak for them. This right now is something that is actually done with a wire that's actually plugged into the person's head, and taking that wireless, so which will need very low radiation transmission that can actually be safely worn by humans. And this is, you know, this goes well beyond, you know, AR and XR. But I think there will be some kind of integration with this, because I do wonder if eyeglasses are actually the form factor for the kind of human computer interface going forward. I wonder if we will be going beyond that and getting straight into brain sensing, you know, on a commercial level, you know, and on a personal level also. Like, brain implants for me are only for, you know, helping the disabled, helping people who really have some kind of, you know, other thing. But I think there have been, you know, the stuff that Meta is doing with the Control Labs acquisition, with being able to sense in the wrist. I think body surface sensing of our intent, and then allowing that to have us hook into AI, and then have the results delivered to us via AR integrated into our worlds. I'm just so excited about how this is going to develop. And I think that, eyeglasses might just be one step on a much longer and more evolving path.
Leslie, I'm going to have an absolutely horrible time explaining that concept to my dad when he listens this episode back, because like
I'm not even sure I explained it very well to you just
honestly, you hit the nail on the head. But like, as a futurist yourself, you're going to be looking that far ahead. For me, I can barely keep up with the AI stuff right now, and that's my job, you know.
So AI assistant.
Well, I use some, but I won't say names to avoid bias, of course. So Leslie, I want to shift gears a little bit in relevance to what we're talking about, because you've written a book, a brand new book. You've written one previously. Let's talk about your first one before going on to your new one, because Interconnected Realities is your first book. I've had for the audience out there, I spent the last week and a half diving into the Leslie Shannon book ether. So my mind is nothing but that. And Interconnected Realities was kind of an overview, metaverse, general concepts, but more in depth on your thoughts and feelings. And there was one point in it that I really wanted to talk to you about. It's something you mentioned earlier around like kind of metaverse, which is you wanted to VR and this concept of AR to create genuinely intellectual encounters. And you touched on it briefly earlier, but I just wanted to kind of gauge how far we are from that concept.
Yeah. Because one of the things that that I've found is first of all, if you're talking, I talk to a lot of companies and who have not yet started doing meetings in VR, and you know, people are like, well, look, we've got Zoom meetings, you know, why would I need to go that extra step? And you can just instantly tell that they've never done it if they're asking that question, because like right now, you know, Ben, you and I are, we're seeing each other in a Zoom-like platform, and it's video. At the end of this, I will not feel that you and I have been in the same room, and I will not feel that you and I have spent time together. But when you're actually in VR, one of the things that you can do in the Quest, and I really don't hear that many people talk about it, but you can actually, there's some platforms where you can get together with other people and bring their avatar into your space. And it's it's actually just astonishing, because you do feel that they are part of your experience. You do feel them in your space. You do feel at the end of the time that you did spend time together. And, you know, I have a Quest Pro, so I've actually, you know, I've got that mixed reality. But even just if it's the two of us in a three-dimensional meeting space in VR that is fully, you know, fully digitized, at the end of the time, you do feel that you were with the other person. And it just enables so much more, as you said, you know, intellectual sharing. And the thing that it's really powerful for, from a business point of view, in my experience, is brainstorming. Brainstorming is very hard to do in Zoom or in other kind of two-dimensional meetings. But when you're three-dimensional, and especially if you're in some kind of an environment that is not mimicking a straight-up office environment, especially something with very expansive space, because, you know, studies have shown that very expansive space actually helps our thinking expand and helps us be more creative. So being with other people in a, you know, in a beautiful, expansive space, and then throwing ideas up, you forget very quickly that, you know, everybody's just an avatar. And and it just becomes a much more efficient way to actually connect and to share ideas. And especially some of the platforms, like one of my favorites, Raum, based in Germany, they let you create objects very easily so that you can... actually, the SAP, there's a trainer at SAP. One of the things that he does is he brings people into a Raum space and he's like, okay, now build the customer journey for me. And so they create, you know, here's a sphere and here's a cube created digitally to then literally show in a concrete way in this digital world, here is the actual customer journey. And okay, now we can talk about it in a way that guarantees nobody has any assumptions that are hidden, because we've made it concrete. We've taken these abstract things and literally made them concrete, and we can all move around them and shift them around. And what happens if this happens? Oh no, then we need to build this contingency. And it's very clear what everybody's talking about. That's the kind of super powerful thing that happens in digital spaces. And, you know, it's up to people like us to tell everybody that this is such this great, great enterprise tool that I think more companies should be using.
See, you're right, because there's one that I use, and it's probably why I found Horizon's World last week to be quite flat, and that's VRChat. Now,
VRChat
is more social. It had legs way before Horizon World, so I just point that out. But I genuinely feel when I'm on it with friends that it's interactive. I feel like they're in an experience with me. And although it's more game aimed at younger audiences with, you know, more general socialization, I feel that there's a lot to learn from it. I'm not sure. Is that, I take it you're familiar with VRChat as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I went to TwitchCon last year, and one of the really powerful, most powerful sessions that I attended were people coming together to talk about VRChat and role-playing games in VRChat. And these people were so passionate and so welcoming of others. It completely blew my mind. Yeah, it's whole community. Like, I mean, I'm I'm you know, I'm a Legends of Zelda player, and so I'm like, you know, working my way through Tears of the Kingdom right now, and I, you know, but I'm alone in there. And so being able to have an experience like that, except you're with other people and there's other, and there are other human beings and anything could happen. Yeah, just super, super exciting. And and really a very serious social connection is created by the people who play these games.
And this ties nicely into your other brand new book, which I've had a very early access to, Virtual Natives, which you penned with Catherine Henry.
Yes.
I wanted to dive into it because from page one, it felt like it was everything you're saying. So for the audience's sake, the book talks about how experiences are already being established in environments, virtual and otherwise. And it's kind of more of an, I found it quite explaining for those who may not be aware of those things. And I was sat there going, I do this every day. You know, I go on VR, I talk about things.
Really a virtual native fan.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm 27 for the audience's record. And, you know, Discord is my life outside of work. You know, it's how I interact. You have your son as well, who I know is kind of an inspiration in this part of the book as well. Talk us through how, like, just give us an overview of the title and how it ties into what we kind of just talk about.
Yeah. So, well, the credit for the title goes to Catherine, my co-author. She, because in at least, you know, here in the States, 20 years ago, people started talking about digital natives. There's one person who coined that term, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, these are the kids who grew up on the internet. But things have shifted since then. One of the things that, so Catherine came to me with the title Virtual Natives, and because I do have two teenage boys, and I see what they're doing all the time, and how different it is, and how fundamentally different their world is from mine, I'm like, well, yes. And so we started researching it, and what we found was amazing. And one of the first things that we uncovered was that the digital natives 20 years ago, you know, yes, they were using the internet, but that first wave of the internet, what it was doing was merely taking pre-existing things from the physical world and then just putting them on the computer. So so in a great example of this is email. You know, it's, if I'm sending an email, it is, I mean, it's called mail. It's got a little envelope icon on my screen, you know? And it was just straight up based on the original physical experience of sending mail. And, you know, when I first started working, before email existed, you would literally type out a memo, print it, stick it into an inter-office envelope, and then somebody would, you know, somebody would come by with a little cart and you'd drop it in their cart and they would send it. They would literally carry it to the other part of the building for that other person to get. And yeah, I know. And so email, it's exactly that process. It's just on computer. And so the digital natives, they grew up with these just computerized version of analog processes. But now here we are 20 years later, people like you never had the original physical experience. And that gives you the freedom to reimagine, because you've got the computing tools to reimagine how this can be done in a far more efficient way. So, you know, so yes, Slack, it makes far more sense to be able to send a message to a bunch of people and then have it go into the record of the project instead of this thing that only you and I saw and the rest of the team never saw, you know, whatever. So yeah, Slack and Discord are far more efficient digital tools, ways of communicating that don't mimic an original physical process. So the virtual natives are the ones who have grown up entirely in this virtual world. And so it's not, you know, the title makes it sound like people who are living their lives in XR. That's not it, actually. It's people who are young enough or free thinking enough, it's not necessarily an age thing, to be able to reimagine how things could be better using purely digital tools. And Catherine and I both feel very strongly that this cohort, because most of them are, you know, very young still, as they age into adulthood and they start running into a bunch of the really stupid legacy stuff that adults, you know, us previous generations have just gone, well, I guess the way it's always been. Things like the way that mortgages are structured, the way insurance companies work, they're going to go, what the hell?
I'm already doing that.
And they have the digital tools. Exactly. I can see the look of pain on your face, you know, and they're going to be looking at the digital tools that they have and saying, you know what, there's a better way to do this. And I think there's going to be a huge amount of disruption that comes from this generation. Because, and this is back where Roblox becomes really important, they have been trained by things like Roblox and Fortnite, where they can take action, they can make money, and they have the confidence and the computing skills to go out there and give it a go.
Exactly. It's terrifying how someone who's 10 years my junior is probably going to surpass me on it as well, which is even worse. Leslie, on this, the thing I took away from the book is, you know, for me, it was everything that I do on a daily basis. You know, me and my friends watch the live action One Piece on Discord remotely together. And
there
all
you
sorts
go.
Of things.
Yep.
But the thing that I trying to understand while I was reading it was, how do you, as a tech exec, you know, in the tech environment, explain this to an executive or a business individual who is a what would be classed as a boomer or something else? Because it almost seems difficult and to explain it, you know, even when I'm doing it to other people. How do you approach this? Because it's mind-boggling to some, I guess.
Well, and I think you have to hit them to get people's attention in the business world. You have to hit them in the pocketbook, and the real implications, at least for now, for businesses, the pain that they're already seeing is, how do we employ and retain these people? Because they do have the technical skills that we need. In fact, one of the examples that I just love, NASA is consciously hiring gamers to do some of the satellite monitoring tasks, because gamers have been trained their entire lives to make rapid decisions based on incomplete information, which older generations are very uncomfortable doing, but gamers are like, yeah, what the hell, you know? And so NASA's actually, you know, actively hiring gamers. And so that's, you know, that's fantastic. That's exactly the kind of thing that you need to do. But you need to meet the virtual natives where they are, because virtual natives are also questioning everything. They can see, especially in the United States, the millennials they played by the rules. They did everything by the book, and yet they have been hammered by multiple recessions and by COVID, and they are economically way behind where their parents were, and there's like no chance that they'll ever catch up. And the virtual natives are going, okay, playing the game by the rules that currently exist, there's no guarantee of success by doing it that way. So you know what? We might as well try it our way. So that means they're not interested in 9 to 5, not interested in commuting, not interested in wearing a suit, not interested in these things that are actually not essential to getting the job done. They are interested in doing the job and then going and living their life. And whatever tools it takes to do that, companies need to be there, and they need to match them. And so they need to not insist so much on, you know, you must be in the office, you know, 90 hours a week or whatever. Yes, you can work remotely. Yes, you can have a nose piercing. Yes, it doesn't matter what color your hair is. All of these things, businesses really need to understand what are the things that we're just doing because we've always done them? And then what are the things that actually make for a good employee? And where might our policies be getting in the way of that? When I first started work as an adult, you know, way, way back in the 80s, the first company I worked for, women, you're not going to believe this, but it's true. Women were not allowed to wear trousers to work. We had to wear skirts. I know. That's how far we've come, right? But it was a completely horrifying policy. Like, I had to go out and buy a bunch of skirts because I don't know what the hell. And right. And so companies, and now that seems impossibly archaic. What were you possibly trying to accomplish with doing that other than holding women back? I mean, what the hell? And so businesses really need to look at their policies now and think, what is it that are things that we just accept as the norm that are actually preventing us from tapping into new talent. And if you've got any kind of policy that is just because, like, women need to wear skirts, whatever the modern equivalent of that is, like, everyone needs to be in the office 5 days a week, that might be a good parallel, you know, that companies who unthinkingly adhere to these old ways are going to scare away new talent. Just bottom line.
I think that's fair. I think it's 100% fair. Leslie, I'm conscious of time. Where can our audience find Virtual Natives?
Virtual Natives and Interconnected Realities are both available from Amazon. However, check your local bookstore online first. Within the U.S., Barnes & Noble and Powell's online both carry it. Internationally, I'm not so sure, which is why I mentioned Amazon. But if you can support your local independent bookstores, please do.
It's a good idea. I did find it funny, wasn't it? You were in Finland the other day and you carried about 2 suitcases worth of books. And I was like, why didn't Leslie Shannon personally deliver my copy, I must admit.
I'm just waiting for the invitation, Ben.
I'm in New York in December, AI Summit New York. I'm sure that's a good one. New York at Christmas. Leslie, rounding things off, is there anything that we've touched on, smart glasses, and we touched on the kind of Neuralink style chip interfaces as well, but any final thoughts? What's your idea of what's to come? You know, you said the metaverse isn't dead. Give us a kind of brief summary of what we talked about and your kind of your view on things.
One of the really fundamental questions is, you know, why? Why AR? Why metaverse? Why digital anything? And for me, the answer is that right now, in order to access computing, our gaze dead ends on a two-dimensional screen. And so, you know, and if you're sitting at your desk and looking at your laptop, you know, that's fine. That's a functional interface and we don't need to mess with that. But when you're out and about in the world, or even just moving through your own home, when you're away from your desk, it's ridiculous that we're all looking at our smartphones all the time. You know, and I say this is from somebody from Nokia, right? So, you know, yes, we helped create this monster. The thing that we all, you know, everybody at a restaurant and everybody's sitting there and everybody's staring at their phones instead of staring at each other. We laugh about it, but that's a problem. It's a problem. The fact that we have to divorce ourselves from our physical world in order to access information and entertainment on these two-dimensional screens. And so for me, the main driver is to get, it's not just that your gaze is not connected to the physical world or the people in it. It's that you're lost a hand too, right? Because you're holding the phone. So for me, the fundamental driver behind all of the AR stuff is to put your gaze back on the actual physical world and the people in it where it belongs, hands free. That's why, you know, for me, the inclusion of the Meta AI into the glasses is so important, because that helps demonstrate that. That's why I think, you know, the heads up display kind of model that we get in cars, people finding that essential. Once we actually start getting these ways that the computing that it fully exists right now in smartphones, when we start getting some of the most functional aspects of that integrated into our lives in a much more intuitive, context-driven, hands-free way, I don't think we're going to be able to come back from it. The same way that my friend with the heads-up display, he found it completely intolerable to just drive a normal car. Once we start getting this information visually incorporated into our world, we're not going to want to go back to carrying a little screen and looking at that all the time and missing the wonderful things that are happening around us in the physical world. That, for me, is actually the purpose and the driver of the metaverse. Yeah,
it's just like AI. You can't put it back in the box once it's opened.
Absolutely not.
Thanks,
absolutely
Sam Altman. Leslie Shannon from Nokia, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Ben, the thrill is mine.
To get more AI news and insights, visit our website at aibusiness.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.